Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on the Lawrence Holmes Show,
we're talking with Sean Frazier, the athletic director of Northern Illinois University. The way that media companies themselves, I mean, my own included, like, everyone has been affected by this, and I keep wondering, like, what is going to be the financial impact of that? Where are we going to see less companies bidding on certain contracts going forward? Like, I don't know if any of us have a really good idea of what's going on.
Here's the deal right here. This too shall pass. We just have to find a way, and we will, to make sure that we hold it off, keep the wolves at the door, and make sure that we get back on track in the future. So, again, I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater here, but, you know, this too shall pass as a crisis. We just need to make sure we do everything we can to put ourselves and systems in place that when it does, that we can get right back at it.
Make me a bicycle, clown!
Yeah, talking with Sean Frazier yesterday was really cool to get someone's perspective when it comes to everything that's happening in college sports. And it's funny because there's some news on that we'll get to here inside of the first segment of the show. I'm Lawrence Holmes. Glad to be with you. We're here with you until 2 o'clock. The crew, Herb Lawrence, Rick Camp, you'll hear their voices throughout the show as well. Here's what we have planned for you. Brad Spielberger of OverTheCap.com is going to join me. Why? Because the Nick Foles contract is out. People now know what it's all about and what it's made up of, and Brad's going to explain to us all of the things that are in it, why it makes sense, and the way that it looks right now from what I'm seeing of the structure of it, of $24 million over 3 years with $21 guaranteed and incentive escalators. I feel like this is a really good deal. And I also don't think that it prohibits Mitchell Trubisky from being the starting quarterback. We'll talk with Brad about that and a bunch of other things, too. We'll get a real education on understanding contracts and the collective bargaining agreement and the salary cap. Really interesting guy. And the people over at Over the Cap, they do a great, interesting product. By the way, yesterday on the show, I spent a lot of time talking about, we were talking strategy and talking about RPOs, and shout out to Olin Krutz, who was listening to the segment, and he sent me some stuff, and he was like, hey, watch this. This will help you out when it comes to enjoying and understanding some of this stuff. And some other people reached out via Twitter. But I was also giving out my thoughts on football books, and I mentioned a bunch of football books. I have a Twitter thread that's in my account right now. Like, if you go look through my timeline at Lawrence W. Holmes, I have a thread of five books, football books, that I really, really like, and I kind of explain why I like each book. So if you're someone that's into reading about the game, you can look through that thread and you can find it. And I think that you'll find the thread, at least one of the books in the thread, interesting, no matter what type of football fan you are. Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic is going to join us at 12:40. She's going to help us try and understand what's going on with college athletics, and her reporting has been top-notch. If you have not got yourself a subscription to The Athletic, I highly recommend it. And Nicole is on top of all of this stuff in college sports. She's great, and her reporting on the waiver that they have given out to the players of spring sports is phenomenal. And again, another high recommendation. Since we were talking about Charles Tillman on the show a couple days ago and talking about his place as far as where he thinks and where we think he might end up in the Hall of Fame and how he gets there, I thought it wouldn't be a bad idea to run back a conversation that I had with Charles about the Hall of Fame and about the Bears and defense, and he tells some great stories. So at 1 o'clock, we're going to do that. Pat McGann's going to join us, I'm guessing, by the Charles chunk around 125, 130. Pat is a great Chicago comedian that has done some creative stuff over the last couple of days. He's just doing stand-up in his house in front of his children, and it's amazing. Like, watching some of the videos on Instagram has been top-notch. So he's going to join us, and we're going to talk with him about that, and we're going to ask him what he's watching. So we have a full show planned for you today, and we're glad that you were hanging out with us. I wanted to start by talking a little bit about the NFL, and the NFL, obviously, like, before I get into my opinion on this, I understand that I am someone who has made quite the career off of working off of what's going on inside the NFL, okay? And I know that right now it's a very important thing to people who work in sports for a living that the NFL is kind of business as usual. It's just strange. And now you have people inside the office. They held a conference call yesterday talking about how they think that they're going to have a full season and that they're preparing like it's going to start on September 10th. And my whole thing is, I don't know how anyone in sports can do that. You've heard me talk for the last couple weeks about this. I get annoyed anytime that anyone brings up the idea of, well, when can baseball start again? Well, when can basketball start again? We're still under a stay at home until April 30th here in Chicago. In the state of Illinois, we're still under that. There are states where sports are played that they haven't even done stuff like this yet. We're still looking to flatten the curve, and there are places that haven't even come close to peak when it comes to COVID-19. I don't know. Everyone has to plan. I'm okay with the planning of it, but it does strike me as it strikes me as interesting that the NFL is just like, we gonna just keep doing this. And even with objections from inside people working at the NFL, they're like, no, it's good. Like, we're just going to keep doing it, and we're just going to see what happens, and hopefully we'll have full stadiums in September. If we have full stadiums and football in September, my hat's off to everyone in the United States and the rest of the world, because it will mean that we did a great job of social distancing, flattening the curve, figuring out an antibody and maybe even a cure for the coronavirus, if that's what we have. It's just such a strange thing, because here's the part of it that you might not care about. I care about it from a couple of different reasons. One, it directly affects me. And two, it directly affects sports. And that's what's happened with the media companies that partner with sports entities. If you take a look at the stocks of places like CBS and Fox, if you look at the stocks of Comcast and even Disney, they've been hit pretty hard over this, and their market value has gone down tremendously. There's been a huge amount of money lost, and we talked yesterday about the NCAA. With no NCAA tournament, the Division I schools were going to divvy up a pool of about $600 million. With no tournament, that pool is down to about $225 million to try and make all of this stuff work. When you start looking around sports in general, tons of sports are just losing money, like day after day after day, as you would expect, because they're not playing. The same thing goes for media companies. The media companies that are partnered with NBA, NHL, NFL, MLB, they're hemorrhaging money too. DAZN, they've decided that they're not going to pay rights fees during this period of time because they can't. And it's not isolated to them. Like, every one of these companies is hemorrhaging. You're seeing the LA Times say that they're not going to print a paper version anymore, at least until things settle down. Fangraphs is in real significant economic trouble. And if you're a baseball fan that loves Fangraphs, I would highly recommend that you get a subscription. If you can afford it, if you can let go of the money, then it would be helpful for them to kind of keep the lights on what they do. But this is happening everywhere. Everywhere. And so there is some connectivity here with the sports leagues that there are some realities that just cannot be ignored. I think that sports is going to be forever changed by this. I think there will be some recovery, but that recovery is not going to happen without there being significant pain to both the sports world and the sports media world. Here's what I'm talking about. The SI Media podcast a couple weeks ago, Rick Camp, you know, hit me to this. He's like, you need to listen to this. Take a listen to what they were discussing as far as the business of sports and the effect that COVID-19 has on the networks involved in this.
They have a huge target on their back to begin with, Jimmy, because Les Moonves is no longer part of the equation, and Les Moonves was their MVP in terms of dealing with the NFL. Remember, when Thursday Night Football came up, there was no doubt in my mind that CBS was going to get it first because of its relationship with Bob Kraft and a lot of the NFL owners. And I think that now with Les gone, that CBS Sunday afternoon package, I'm sure Bob Iger is looking at it. I'm sure others are looking at it. So CBS was going to be in a very difficult position from the start. I think one of the reasons why they had to spend the money on Tony was not only did they lose the SEC, I can imagine Bob Bakish saying to Sean, you better not lose the SEC and Tony Romo. So they had to spend money on Tony Romo. And then all of a sudden, you know, you hope that that is going to be some wind at your back in terms of, you know, securing the slot, the keeping the Sunday afternoon slot. But, you know, it may not be enough. At some point, companies can only do, particularly public companies, can only spend a certain amount of money. And so all I'm saying is I think it's going to be very, very interesting to watch the valuation of that company. And, you know, for you look back on at a time, remember when ABC was looking at the previous package, they were losing $175 million on Monday Night Football. And that was considered just, you know, unacceptable loss by most of the board. It's only $175 million. And now Disney's having to go out to some credit markets in their financial situation. And so I just think that, you know, while we all do our analysis of which company, which network wants which package, and are the packages going to stay the same, and who has the inside track, we have to understand that there are some macroeconomic elements at work that are going to that might prove, as in the case when Turner decided not to go for the NFL years and years ago after they lost so much money on Waterworld. We should start paying attention to them as well.
That's James Andrew Miller and Jimmy Traina on the Sports Illustrated Media podcast. It's happening. Like, all of this stuff is happening. So it's just a strange thing, like, knowing it from the inside of someone who works in media, like how much media companies themselves are struggling, and understanding how, whether it's college sports or professional sports, like, a lot of these leagues are struggling. It's going to be interesting to see if the NFL is going to be able to get what it wants. Now, look, the NFL is a powerhouse. We know that whenever they get games back on the air, that people are going to watch. If you look at the top 100 rated shows in 2019, the top 100 rated, 78 of them are NFL games. That's the key, that they move the needle when it comes to television. Brett McMurphy had tweeted out that a Power Five, there a bunch of the Power Five presidents and athletic directors were talking, and that there's a chance that college football may have to wait until the spring of next year to get started because of some of the concerns with all of this. It's to make any plans about the near future. I don't know if that's really a smart way to go about things. Let me go back to Kevin Frazier. I love talking with Sean Frazier. I don't know why I call Kevin. Sean Frazier about this yesterday. NIU's athletic director. He was really honest in talking about what some of the economic struggles are for everyone involved in college sports, but particularly what happens if there is no football.
So the reality is this, right? That's a big nut. And obviously I talked about the potential $600 million nut that happened based on the revenues from the men's basketball tournament. But as you can imagine, maybe double, triple, maybe quadruple what's involved when you're taking away a football to an FBS program like ours. So it's something that is a heresy to even think about. But the reality is that we are modeling those things, right? We are modeling scenarios from worst case scenario of no season at all to a postponed or delayed season. So we're constantly in that, again, no substitute for daily preparation. So we need to take a look at what that might look like and the financial impact for that not happening. But again, Lawrence, this is all about the health and safety, right? We have to see how things go, but it's important also to model those issues. And those are real realities that if that happens, we need to make sure we plan. And it will be quite devastating. I can't even try to tell you anything different than that. If we do not have a football season, it will definitely change the fabric of college athletics.
I agree. And I think that it's smarter to delay all this until we have a better sense of how affected we are as a world and as a country. And with football, I also think that the human element has to be taken into account. Considering that things aren't uniform, and that's part and parcel to how we are put together as a republic, that the governors have a lot of power in this on deciding how we approach this, unless there is a more heavy-handed tactic used by the federal government, which some people would bristle at. We don't know state to state how bad this is going to be. And if I'm the NFLPA, you can make all the plans you want, but I don't know if I want to go play football in Florida in September or October. And I hope that as the NCAA and some of these athletic directors like Sean Frazier, I hope that they are modeling that. The idea of the safety of not only the players, but the support staff, the stadiums, the broadcast teams, all of that stuff is significant. I think that we are in a place where sports is forever changed, and we're all going to have to adapt. I'm not saying, I don't want you to feel sorry for anyone that's in the media business, but understand that there are things that have to be adhered to make all of this thing work. People think media are just journalists. Like when I talk about media, capital M, you're thinking it's just the person that asked the tough question at a press conference that you like, or you don't like the way that they talk to this particular politician or this particular politician. Media, capital M, is all of this stuff. Where the money comes from to help the leagues broadcast and grow. And I'm telling you, that there's been significant atrophy for all media companies. And I do wonder if it's going to have an effect on how sports looks going forward. It's just something I want to put in your brain. But let me give you some good news. I don't mean to be gloom and doomy today. It was something that was on my mind. I felt like I needed to talk about it. Let me give you a little bit of good news. And if you're a Cub fan in particular, you might be interested in this. After seven years, a deal has been reached between DirecTV and the Dodgers and Sportsnet LA. So there are millions of Dodgers fans that weren't able to watch Dodgers games over the last 7 years because of a dispute on carriage, and after 7 years, it got fixed. I'm surprised that the negotiations are still taking place, but maybe that means that the negotiations are taking place between Sinclair and Comcast too. And maybe when it's all said and done, if we do get back to some sort of sports normalcy, you'll have your games on marquee. Maybe. Okay. Whew. How about we talk some more business of football? Brad Spielberger of Over the Cap is going to explain the Nick Foles contract to us. He's going to do that next here on The Score. Well, Nick Foles' contract is out there for the public to talk about because a lot of reporters have gotten their hands on the specifics on it. I wanted to talk a little bit about it and learn a little bit more about that contract and about the collective bargaining agreement and cap space for the Bears. So I follow Brad Spielberger on Twitter at BradOTC. He works over at thecap.com. He's one of the authors of The Drafting Stage, and he's been doing a lot of work on where the Bears are at in relative to the cap and what this Nick Foles deal does. He joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. Hey, Brad, how are you?
Doing well. How you doing, Lawrence?
I'm doing really well. Thank you so much for jumping on, because I know that you've been in the lab crunching all sorts of numbers. So for the Bears fan that's wondering about the impact of Nick Foles, what does his contract and the way that it's broken down say to you?
Sure. So Nick Foles' deal looks like a 3-year deal with an $8 million base salary for each year just across the board. We know there's $20.25 million of that is still guaranteed. And so, best guess is the first 2 years would be fully guaranteed, and then, $4.25 million in that third year would be guaranteed. The beauty of the way it's structured with the void years, obviously, there's a little bit of danger there in that if Foles does play really well, he might vote out of the deal and look for, a bigger extension somewhere else. But because the guarantees are all tied into base salary, if he did void out, then the remainder of the guarantees would disappear and would go away.
Okay, well, that's good news. So as far as the money, looking at it, because before we get into the details of it, you look at it and go, man, they're spending $21 million in 2020 for Nick Foles. How does the cap hit break down for the Bears?
Yep, so we originally had it about $15.6 million was going to be the cap hit for the Bears coming from Nick Foles from the trade over. It's now looking like it's going to just be a flat $8 million. There is $6 million in incentive that he could hit, and that works a couple ways. So first, he would hit it in this current 2020 year, and on top of that, there's a one-to-one conversion ratio where every dollar in incentive that he earns in 2020 would actually turn into additional base salary in that following year as well.
So it's not cap prohibitive. It's actually a really good deal for the Bears when it comes to the salary cap.
It is, in terms of salary cap, it really is a much more comfortable with the deal for sure. It is not prohibitive. It gives them a bit more room to be a little bit more flexible, maybe make one or two more mid-tier signings. Definitely nothing big. It is pretty flexible from a cap perspective, which is good to see.
Earlier in the week, it looked like the Bears were down to about $2 million in salary cap space. And obviously, you can massage the cap by doing some restructuring or extensions with people. And so how much money has the Foles deal saved them for this year's salary cap?
Yep. So it saved what we, our prediction with the $2 million on there was under the assumption he was going to cost $15.6 million. So now, you know, that almost gets chopped in half with this new restructure. So, you know, I have them right now at about $8.5 million in space. That is before we know the Jermaine Ifedi details. So I would guess that's probably going to cost $4-4.5 million if I had to guess, which brings them back down to about $4 million. But as you mentioned, with some extensions and restructures, these are total guesses, but, you know, just off the top of my head, if they were to restructure Akeem Hicks and Charles Leno, they could create about $10 million total there. The Allen Robinson extension, which has been floated for a while now, they could probably create another $7, $8 million there. So right there, you're getting back up into the $20 million cap space range just with those couple moves right there.
Brad from overthecap.com is joining me here on The Score. Why would players take some of these restructures? What's the benefit for them to help the franchises if they come to them with an extension or with a restructure?
So it's very common now for the original contract to actually have language to the effect of the team is allowed to unilaterally do this restructure and, you know, the player has no control over it. Why the players don't hate it so much is that from a cash perspective, when you convert base salary into a signing bonus, that player gets all that cash, you know, day of or within the month, right? So instead of a, you know, $10 million base salary that they're going to get paid out, you know, every 2 weeks, just like you and I, maybe a little bit more money, but, you know, instead of it being set up that way, they get basically another signing bonus and they'll get a lump sum, you know, a bunch of $1 million. So that's why there's a little bit more, you know, wiggle room in that regard.
Where do you think from a dollar standpoint, if you were Allen Robinson's people, what would you be looking for in the form of an extension?
I'm probably looking around 5 years, $85 million extension. And you also mentioned why would a player do an extension? Same concept, you know, it might lower or it should lower his cap hit in that first year. But, you know, the signing bonus he'll get that'll be prorated over the rest of the contract will be more than he was going to make this year, presumably. And obviously he'll have a bunch more guarantees. I would guess of the $85 million, probably $40 million will be guaranteed at signing. You know, some of it being a signing bonus, some being roster bonuses, and some being guaranteed base salary. So, yeah, if I was his representation, that's probably where I'm looking.
So Brad's colleagues over at Over the Cap, Jason and VJ, they wrote a book that I love. And it's hard because I'm not really a numbers guy, and trying to sift through it was difficult, but I think useful. It's called Crunching the Numbers, an inside look at the salary cap and negotiating player contracts. For someone who isn't necessarily business inclined, what would you suggest – along with this book, but to understanding how the NFL salary cap and salary structure works, how would you advise them to learn more about it?
Yeah, so I would say that basically my introduction into learning about all this was through that book as well. But I do agree with you, at times it can get a bit dense. And so if you go to the Over the Cap website and you just search, you know, let's say one specific topic from the book, there's probably a 95% chance that there's an article that, you know, in much simpler language and simpler terms, breaks down, you know, a specific chapter into a long form article with examples and with a lot more detail, you know, but in a more approachable sense. And I do just want to give them a shout out. Bobby Wagner of the Seahawks actually claims that he used Crunching Numbers to negotiate his own contract, which he negotiated himself with the Seahawks, which was a slam dunk deal for him. So that book is the gold standard of NFL salary cap education.
And you now have finished the book too. The drafting stage is the name of the book. So you and Jason got together and put this book together. What's in this book?
Yep. So they actually just launched today. And so the drafting stage is all about examining it started with examining draft trade value charts. You know, a lot of people are familiar with the Jimmy Johnson draft trade chart. And it basically looks at why teams are still using this kind of outdated, antiquated draft trade chart from the late 90s or actually early 90s. You know, now we have a new salary cap. We have a whole new rookie wage scale. So it doesn't really make any sense that teams are still looking at that chart. So the genesis of the book was basically creating our own version of a draft trade value chart. And then it kind of branches into looking at positional values, looking at, you know, when you should trade up, when you should trade down, and all sorts of things tied to basically trying to tie rookie deals and rookie draft picks into the veteran market.
Huh. Okay. I'm definitely intrigued. And now it's on Amazon, so I can just order that while I am talking to Brad Spielberger of OverTheCap.com right now. So talk to me about the Bears' 2 second-round picks. What are they actually worth?
So let's see, 43 and 50. It's not so much about the surplus value of the contract would be in there. I can't tell you that off the top of my head, but the odds are that if you're getting a guy, you know, that's a high second round pick, you're probably saving a couple million dollars a year on that player, because odds are, you know, a 43rd or 50th overall pick should turn into a pretty good NFL player, right? And so, of course, guys are going to tend to be, you know, not as good as they will be eventually in their rookie year. There's going to be growing pains. But you look at a Pat Mahomes, for example, you know, 10th overall pick. I think he's making about $6 million a year on his contract. And he was an MVP of the league in his first full season, is worth probably $45 million a year. So they're saving $30+ million a year on that guy every year.
You talked about Bobby Wagner using crunching the numbers. Do you think that it's a good idea for players to negotiate their own deals? I mean, obviously, like the crunch of the numbers helps as a guide, but I know that Richard Sherman, there was a lot of debate about whether or not Richard Sherman got the full value. Now, he hit a bunch of his incentives, but I'm not sure that he necessarily put together a great contract for himself.
Yeah, I'm totally with you there. So I will say, as a lawyer, you know, I think it's in my obligation, I would have to say that it's definitely okay to negotiate it, but you should definitely have someone look over it, just for the language aspect, not even so much the, you know, the money. But yeah, Richard Sherman, in our opinion at Over the Cap, pretty much across the board, did not really negotiate himself a great deal. He was coming off a tough Achilles injury, but he's, you know, still one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL. And even when hitting those incentives, still was making like 10th or 11th highest cornerback money, which is, you know, I'm not trying to knock the guy. He deserves more because he's that good of a player. So I think it's okay for players to do. I think that they understand the market well and they can definitely do it, but it's always good, regardless of what you're doing, always good to have some, you know, some friends or confidants take a look at it.
Well, Brad, this was a real pleasure, man. We'll have to do this again. I'm really looking forward to reading the drafting stage, creating a marketplace for NFL draft picks. I love football books, as you could tell by my Twitter thread today. I love football books, so I'm going to add this to my list of books.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much for having me on and giving the book a nice shout out.
All right, Brad, thanks a lot. That is Brad Spielberger. You can follow him at BradOTC. And if you're someone that loves the business and the contract and the salary cap aspect of the NFL, he's a wonderful follow. The guys at Over the Cap are really wonderful follow. And I'm going to tell you, he's right about crunching the numbers. It was one of those books where I would read a chapter and maybe reread a couple of pages of the chapter and then put it down till the next day. Like some of the other football books that I like Blood, Sweat, and Chalk, I could pick that bad boy up and read it cover to cover in a day. But this was one of those books where my brain was doing a lot of work. And I was like, I'm not good at numbers. I got to put this down. But they do offer they take contracts and they explain how the NFL salary cap works and how contracts have to be put together to make them fit inside a team salary cap structure. Really, really good guide for you. And the guys Over the Cap are really valuable to those of us who do sports for a living. I'm going to take a break. When we come back, Nicole Auerbach of the Athletic is going to join us. She's been doing incredible reporting on what's going on in college sports right now. I'm looking forward to talking with her next here on The Score. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all those working throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, including postal workers, CTA staff, and airport staff. We appreciate you. That's a great note from the folks over at Northwestern. Over the last couple of days, we've seen a real spike in the news about college athletics, considering that they granted a waiver to spring sport athletes for another year of eligibility. Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic has been doing some really incredible reporting on this subject, and I've kind of used her as a guide in trying to get through and understand what's happening here. So I was really happy when I saw that she was going to be available to come be on the show. She joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. Nicole was actually in the Score studios a few months ago, and we haven't met personally yet. And I was looking forward to meeting her, but she was doing her radio show from one of our studios. So it's nice to now get the opportunity to talk with you, Nicole. Thank you so much for joining me here on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I guess we'll have to wait a little while to meet in person.
Yeah, we're going to have to wait a little bit longer, but that's okay. I have your work on The Athletic, and I got you here on the air, which is great. What did you think when the NCAA decided that they were going to grant a waiver to the spring sport athletes?
Yeah, well, it was a really interesting lead up to that decision. So I ultimately was not too surprised that they granted the waiver, because I think a lot of people just like fundamentally believe it was fair, and they want athletes of all sports to get four full seasons of eligibility. But, I do think that the financial piece of it, which ultimately read to me like more kind of a compromise here that, yes, you get the eligibility, you get to extend your eligibility clock, but the schools do not have to commit the exact same level of aid to you that they did this year. So the schools have that flexibility because they don't know, how certain the revenue that's going to be coming in this year and in this coming academic year, they don't know what it's going to look like. So they wanted that flexibility to be able to offer less or in some cases, maybe none, but still like offer the opportunity. And then the student would have to decide if they're willing to pay to play. And a lot of them are already, they're on partial scholarship for a lot of those spring sports. So, it's going to have a lot of hard conversations and some messy decisions for sure. But I wasn't surprised that fundamentally they believed they should get the eligibility back, but also that the schools wanted to protect their financial interests in, a recession, in a situation where you don't know if there's going to be football this fall, and just in a world where, the revenue streams are really uncertain.
How big of a hit did the members of the NCAA take with no NCAA tournament?
It was pretty significant. I mean, the number, which is still going to sound like a lot, is $225 million for all the Division I schools, and there's certain ways it's split that are complicated and a little hard to get into, but it was supposed to be $600 million. So that is a big, big difference when you're talking about the way that you're used to funding your athletic department and sponsoring sports and paying support staff. And there's just so many different things that have grown in the last, let's say, 10 years as, the economy has been good and sports, college athletics has gotten bigger and bigger, right? And now you don't have all of that money coming in. You're not sure about donations and endowments. You're not sure about football, TV revenue, all of these other things. And already you know how much a hit you took from the, revenue you're used to getting from the NCAA because of no tournament. So, it's a big deal. It's going to affect different schools differently, depending on, what they use that for and whether or not that they have football. And that's really what kind of runs everything. It's a significant hit. And as soon as the number was announced, the 225, I was talking to athletic directors and conference commissioners who were immediately trying to do the math and figure out what that meant for them, and what it would potentially mean in terms of scholarships and, down the road if they're going to have to cut sports.
Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic joining me here on The Score, and we're talking about the NCAA and the impact that we're seeing all over the NCAA landscape with COVID-19 and how we're dealing with it. From people that you've talked to, Nicole, what's the thought on how football is going to, even like, let's say that everything was perfect, that the country reacts perfectly to this and that there would be football in the fall? How in the world are they going to get that done?
Yeah, nobody knows. I mean, and even in a perfect world, I don't think they could still guess at when they're going to be able to go back on campuses. When are schools going to allow students? Because that's obviously a huge piece of this. These are athletes, college football players are usually on campus pretty much all summer. They've got training camp. They've got all these different things that prepare them physically as well to have a season, right? So there's so many different pieces to this because they're going to need to, everyone's at home trying to stay in shape, right? You're doing body weight stuff. You're lifting whatever you've got in your house. you know, there's going to be a period of time whenever they're able to get back on campus, whenever they're able to get back in this strength and conditioning program, to get them to a point where they can, you know, they can play tackle football again. And that's not going to be 1 week. That's not going to be 2 weeks. So you got to build in that time as well. Outside of, you know, okay, our class is going to start on time. What's enrollment going to look like? Are there going to be the bans of gatherings over 50 people? Is that going to be lifted? Right? Like all of those things have to come into play, which is part of the reason everyone is so uncertain right now and concerned, because, you know, obviously there's just so much money in those TV deals and ticket sales for so many of those schools.
What's the most interesting thing about the story of the students over the last 3 weeks that you found in doing all the research that you've been doing and reporting that you've been doing for The Athletic?
About just what their experiences are like right now?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just weird. And you know, there's a lot of anxiety around it. I mean, think about how much anxiety we're all feeling right now about just the uncertainty of all of this. And, you know, I just keep thinking about the seniors, and not even just senior athletes, because obviously, you know, we're all, you know, heartbroken for them not to have their senior season. But, you know, now they're also not going to have graduation in a lot of cases. That's already been canceled and will probably continue to get canceled. And just sort of all of those extra end of college, rite of passage experiences, that's awful. That's terrible to think about. And then you have with the athletes uncertainty about, you know, what is my school going to offer me if I want to come back? I'm going to have to make a financial decision. Are they going to ask me to pay more of my own way to play and have that final season? Do I want to do that in the midst of a recession? You know, there's just so many hard conversations. And I think that one thing that's been overlooked, and this is something that administrators keep bringing up to me as something that we're not talking enough about, it really is the mental health of all of this. And, you know, I know they're trying and they have psychologists and all these things, but, you know, when you're by yourself out of your routine, and, you know, these athletes have such structured routines and schedules. So to get out of that, to be home, to be losing all of these things that are very important to you, it really does a number on you in terms of your mental health. So, you know, just thinking about all of that and just going through that with so much uncertainty at age, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21, you know, it just seems really, really difficult for those athletes.
I was thinking about this when the announcement first came, and I haven't gotten any real clarity on this, and you might be able to help in this regard because you do such an incredible job covering college sports. Is there a Title IX issue here when it comes to allowing the athletes and scholarships to kind of remain, the spring sport athletes, or is it mitigated because it'll even out?
I haven't heard any issues related to that, so I'm assuming that whatever you know, it was kind of how they did it this year. And if it was Title IX compliant, I would assume that it would kind of carry over into next year because the same scholarship. But that's a good question. I'm not sure. And I also, the one thing I have not gotten a ton of clarity on is what about transfers and kind of how that aid would be determined. Because again, if you're talking about seniors, you're talking about people who are graduating. So, you know, those are some things. There's definitely a lot that still needs to be determined, and schools are still kind of waiting on more clearance and guidance on that because, you know, they've basically gotten the same information that the public has, which is, okay, yes, you get these waivers, you're able to do it, and the schools are at their discretion about how much money they're going to commit, and that's kind of all they've got right now. So I think a lot of people are waiting on some clarity for some of those topics.
Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic joining me here for a couple more minutes. All right, we've been very serious. I think that we've been very responsible in the way that we've talked about this. Let me try to ask you something fun. You are someone that travels around the country covering college sports. Once there's an all clear and there's an opportunity to go visit a football stadium or a basketball arena, what's a place that you're hoping to get back to first?
I thought you were going to ask me to go somewhere fun, not somewhere for sports, for work. I was going to tell you, I had a trip to Europe planned for May that's canceled.
Oh,
so that's
no.
Do.
Oh, I'm sorry
that's
about that.
That's what I want to do. But, yeah, I mean, I'm just going to say any football stadium because that would mean that we have football this fall.
And what's your gut tell you about whether or not we're going to have it?
You know, it's so uncertain. Everything keeps changing day to day, week to week. I'd be surprised if, you know, if we're at a position where it's going to be able to start on time at this point. But anything else would be kind of just totally guessing. Because, again, there's so many things kind of above college sports control, you know, even at a university level, and then even at like a national, you know, federal guideline level, that it's hard to predict. But I do think there's a reason that people are, you know, really trying to get creative and throw out different different ideas and plans. And could you do an 8-game season? Could you start in the second semester? I think there's a reason that, you know, people are thinking that way, because it just seems, I know it's only April 1st, but it seems hard to think that, you know, students are going to enroll and classes are going to start again in person on time this fall.
What was the place that you were most looking forward to going into in Europe?
Well, I was going to go visit my childhood friend, lives in Copenhagen. So we were going to do Copenhagen, Amsterdam, and in Italy. So it is on hold. Hopefully we can get there at some point.
Well, Nicole, I thank you so much for being available. And I can't say this enough. Like, your reporting has been top notch, and The Athletic is very lucky to have you. Thanks for spending some time with my audience.
All right. Thank you so much. Anytime.
That's Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic. You should be following her and reading her work, because she's, if you're someone that loves college sports, like, she's really done a great job of staying on top of what's happening around it. Okay, we need to, that hour went by really fast, and I'm sorry that I was I don't mean to be negative, is not the right word. Critical is probably the word, although I already did get a text from Olin where Olin's like, damn, dude, he basically just sent me Eeyore with a rain cloud. But I am going to lighten things up a little bit. Since we had a conversation about Charles Tillman this week, talking about him, talking about his place in football history and that sort of thing over the last couple days, I went back and listened to an interview that I did with Charles at The Score, and I think that it's fun and it speaks to some of the things that we were talking about, and I would like to share it with you. So buckle up, Buttercup, because this is going to be the fun portion of the show. It's coming up next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.